technology is here to stay. Technology is a game changer. Technology is actually running the banks and NBFCs and, you know, stockbroking these days versus the organization running these technologies. Investments, especially from the overseas countries and the shareholders, they will not give you good money if they find that your controls are weak, right? If regulatory comes and penalize you, right, for non-compliance to cyber security, these days your stocks also go down. Finding a right guy is becoming very difficult these days, at least, you know, what I have experienced, right? I have not seen much of, you know, people or, you know, staff who have a strong technical expertise. In cybersecurity, you need to understand it's a multiple domains, right? You have a governance, risk and compliance, you have security architect, you have security operations, you have SOC. So I think 4 to 5 domains are there where people, you know, build their careers.
But the scope of cyber is extremely vast. I think we have agreed on that. But from a BFSI standpoint, so if the top 3 cyber concerns, you know, which you as a CISO are proactively planning for. So welcome to yet another edition of the Security Chips podcast. Security Chips is a podcast series of DSCI and it's an attempt to bring out the cybersecurity and data protection nuances by engaging in conversations with thought leaders from the vast field of security as well as data protection. So the theme that we have finalized for today is financial sector cybersecurity. Because financial sector, the way it has been transforming, we thought, let's talk about the nuances that go into tackling the cybersecurity complexities for the financial sector. And the guest that we have for today is Mr. Shankar Ram Rakhiani, who is the CISO for IIFL, or as we all know, the India Infogain Group. Welcome, Mr. Shankar. Thank you so much for being part of the podcast. So, you know, before I actually delve into the subject matter, I think it would be interesting to know your journey so far, you know, your entry into the cybersecurity world, how it happened and what's been the journey like so far.
Sure. And firstly, thanks to DSCI, you know, for, you know, giving me the opportunity to share my experiences. And so about my journey, I started my career in 2005, okay, with Wipro. So primarily it was a more kind of a tech support role in the technology field, right? So I worked there for almost 1.5 years. And then I moved to a product security company, Symantec in Pune, where I spent more than, you know, 4.5 years. So I think from 2007, I, you know, entered into the world of cybersecurity and more on the risk and compliance domain.
Right.
So where I spent, you know, more than 4.5 years, you know, did a lot of, you know, implementation, pre-sales and post-sales support for all the enterprise security products across the globe. So that was a start. You know, I started my career in Symantec, and now it's almost close to 17 years plus I'm in the cybersecurity domain. And I would say it's a roller coaster ride, and most of the, honestly, it's more ups and rather than downs. It's primarily, you know, journey has been always upwards, okay, towards my career. I could spend good amount of time in future generally as a deputy CISO for both the companies. And now I am with IIFL for more than 6 years now, heading the information security and business continuity at the group level.
Right. I'm so glad you mentioned the word roller coaster.
Yeah.
Because cybersecurity, you know, coming from the field myself, so cybersecurity, you know, the vastness of it simply can be overwhelming, right? So, but rather than, you know, I will certainly come to the challenges part of it, you know, down the conversation. But in terms of the high points, which you mentioned that it's been an upward trajectory. So what are those, you know, high points which you would actually call deeply satisfying, you know, as a security leader for you?
Yeah, so I always believe a top-down approach. So one of the most satisfying things is that nowadays when I go to board, top management, CEOs, or in fact, when we, you know, interact with CROs, CTOs and other CXOs, right?
Right.
Nobody says no to cybersecurity. They all understand the need, you know, of it and why it is important for the organization. Mm. So I have seen as a very positive sign, you know, for my current organization as well as, you know, our, you know, the many organizations that I know, you know, and, you know, a lot of colleagues, you know, we interact. That is one of the positive signs.
Mm.
The other thing is that with the emerging regulations, so I see not only as a CISO, but other regulations like SEBI, RBI, NHB, IRDA, all have been now very focused on organizations to take cybersecurity very, very seriously. That's why we see guidelines coming every month or every quarter on various aspects, which keeps the organization awake all the time. It also keeps cybersecurity teams, CISO, always in the demand that there is someone to watch you, and that's why you need to put right controls at all the time and do not be complacent in your journey. Apart from that, there is a huge support from the top management. Okay, especially the board of directors, and the MDs and the chairmen of the organization. They say that we always need to ensure that all controls we implement, keep our data, secure, all the time. Systems should be intact, okay, without not much, any issues. And apart from that, we also see customers are also playing a very important role, in our journey. They have been also focused. We get a lot of requests from the customers that, how we play, how we handle the data. Is the data secured? We are also subject to a lot of audits. Even auditors appreciate that, it's not a very easy role to handle.
Right.
So I think these are all the positive signs, okay, that keeps, CISO's, life, up and running all the time. It's a challenging, but that's why CISOs are always called to the board meeting these right. days. They are part of all the committees. Okay, they play a very important role. Organizations do not get investments if they, from the, stakeholders or shareholders, if they see the controls are in poor state, right? That's why CISO role is becoming very critical to ensure, they implement all of them in good spirit, not only just in compliance.
So there are two pieces which I would pick up from this response of yours. One is, talking to the board, talking to the management, right? Because I think a lot of organizations would be really, ecstatic to even note that the kind of response you have been getting from your board, right? But I think a lot of organizations still are trying to figure out what is the best way to talk to the boards. What is the kind of language which boards would be able to appreciate? Of course, the risk perspective and the business perspective is something that they have a handle on. But what would be, what would be your two cents as to how should one strategize even about talking to the boards? How do we do that?
I think very good question, and it becomes a very important factor how you communicate to the top management and the board, right? First thing is that not all the board members understand the technical language. You need to make them understand in their own language. You need to now start quantifying the risks, right? You need to see, what are the emerging trends, okay, are outside. You need to make them aware all the time. Tomorrow, if you go and, speak to them and you will tell them that the firewall has an issue or, the application has a vulnerability, SQL injection, they will not understand these languages. They will only understand that if the system is getting hacked or the data is getting breached, how much amount of loss, the organization will suffer.
Yeah.
If we don't comply with certain regulations, let's say with SEBI or RBI, in terms of any of the, their guidelines, how much it would be penalty? How much organization will suffer if they fail to implement the guidelines at a certain point?
Right.
Apart from that, should there be any, for example, ransomware attack, right? What is the strategy to, overcome against that attack? So your communication has to be precise. It has to be point to point, and primarily it has to be less technical and more strategic, right? You need to communicate to them in the language that they understand. And that's why CISOs, the biggest, skills that they need is that it's an excellent communication,
yeah.
presentation,
right.
negotiation, as well as convincing skills.
Yeah.
What things can go wrong, they should be able to, help them understand.
Right.
By speaking only in the hardcore technical language, which is could be the language of CTO or, the security head or yeah. the person who's handling the systems, they may not able to understand.
Right.
So your language should be, precise. It should be in simple words and give them a good view of the dashboard. Okay, where are the, issues?
Right.
Give them a high level picture of the organization.
Yeah.
You may not go, explain them point by point, but at least tell them the synopsis of it. So policy, they will not read the entire policy. or, you know, entire, let's say, a crisis management plan. But the synopsis of that, that will really help them, you know, as an, you know, person to, you know, because in a board meeting, you may get 6 to 8 minutes or 10 minutes max for your session, you know, for you to present the session. You cannot go with 100 pages PPT, right? You have to, you know, consolidate that and, you know, complete in 2 to 3, you know, slides and highlight the red flags to them, yeah. Right? We always call it that good news can wait. Bad news should be highlighted first. Absolutely. That's why you have to be, you know, come into that terms and make them ready, right? After all the regulations only say that board is accountable. So it's not only CISO's responsibility, it's board responsibility to ensure organization is in good shape all the time. So communicating in a good language, simple business language helps. Yeah. Quantify the risk, right? They understand the money, the monetary loss which the organization will suffer. Also give them some alternatives, right? If we don't do this, then what could be the repercussions and all.
Right. So I'm so glad, you know, another thing which I would pick up from what you just mentioned is the CISO's role, right? I think you have seen it all, you know, across the companies. I do remember that CISO a few years back, you know, almost a decade back, was considered more of an operations-centric role, where a CISO is, you know, in charge of overseeing everything pertaining to security ops. But now it has, you know, very beautifully transitioned into a more strategic one. So, you know, how do you see this transition and how do you explain this transition? And are all the CISOs, you know, experiencing this transition or is it limited to a few?
No. So, as you rightly said that few years back, security was always a back office, you know, function, right? People in the organization did not want this function because we were always seen as a bottleneck, okay, when it comes to for any approvals or any business projects, because we disallowed lot of things, yeah, you know, to users, which created an inconvenience for the, you know, staff and the management. But I would say, thanks to, you know, the hackers, right, which actually created a lot of demand because they started exploiting the applications, you know, lot of security incidents happened, okay, over the past decade. More than that, organization fueled their, you know, digital transformation initiatives. So more business comes with more risk. More application exposed to internet comes with, you know, huge risk, right? So these are because the business also, you know, grown, you know, multi-X, right, for many of the organization. So there is always pros and cons, okay, when, you know, we face, you know, these kind of, you know, momentum. That is why we saw a lot of, you know, issues started around, you know, data security, data privacy, you know, breaching of the customer info. Ransomware, you know, triggered all this point because earlier, the disruption was not there when the security incident occurs. But now if the ransomware hits, organizations suffer for days and weeks or even months to come back to normalcy. Right. Because it's a, you know, catastrophic and, you know, kind of incident where, you know, it takes multiple days for the recovery. Yeah. Though organization may have a sound recovery plan, backups, but that takes time to restore. So earlier it was considered as, you know, a back office. But now with the regulatory push, so I will talk about the BFSI. Yeah, there the, you know, CISO role is taken, you know, very seriously by the top management as well as the regulation. Yeah. They are all getting the budgets, okay, and lot of guidelines have been stringent, especially by RBI and SEBI in last few years now. A lot of tech security related initiatives, lot of audits, lot of reviews, gap assessments organization does on regular basis. More than that, it is the investments, especially from the overseas countries and the shareholders. They will not give you an, you know, a good money if they find that your controls are weak, right? If regulatory comes and penalize you, right, for non-compliance to cyber security, these days your stocks also go down. Organization suffers a cyber incident, again the stocks goes down. So it's a clear, you know, cyber security has become a business issue now. So gone were the days where, you know, we were not front-ending the game, but now CISOs are all part of the strategy meets. Yeah. If business is onboarding any project or application, risk assessments are being done. Yeah. They are taking our buy-in. Right. We are helping them to clear the, you know, required audits and due diligence, you know, done by the third party or their, right, investors. So it's becoming a very, very critical role. And after all, we are the control function of the organization. Absolutely. We are not a maker function. We are a checker function. where our job is to check the, you know, things, you know, deployed by, you know, technology and business teams. We are here to, you know, identify, you know, proactively identify the issues before the attacker exploits. Yeah. And with the regulatory, you know, becoming, you know, very stringent, I think this role will grow, and most of the organizations, I think, will adhere to this part, what, you know, what I said. But for non-BFSI, maybe organizations who are not, you know, very in the, you know, B2C and, you know, less digitally, you know, exposed, it will take time. So there will be, IT will always have the upper hand, but in BFSI, it's primarily technology and security, both, you know, go, you know, neck to neck. Kind of thing.
I'm taking a step back, and for the BFSI sector, because, you know, whether it is, you know, adopting technology, or whether it is, you know, innovating and experimenting with products, or even from a compliance standpoint, I think BFSI almost always leads the way for other sectors and sets an example, right? So from a tech transformation standpoint, what do you think, or what's your outlook, let's say, for the next 3 to 5 years, where the overall BFSI is headed? I know BFSI further has so many segments within it, but...
Yeah, so BFSI primarily, the first goal is that they will never, you know, do something which the regulatory has not given the permission, right? Yeah. So they will always want to experiment things, right? So in technology... more, if you talk about the, you know, technology transformation, yeah, fintechs would be the first who will, you know, adopt, you know, new technologies, emerging technologies. Banking will always wait for fintechs and, you know, other non-BFSI, okay, to, you know, to evaluate that. So example, cloud. So BFSI were the last industry, okay, or, you know, last sector to, you know, onboard, you know, started, you know, onboarding the applications on cloud. Whereas non-BFSI, they started very early. We did it 6 years back as an NBFC, but banks were still reluctant. Then finally the COVID came, and, you know, it became a, you know, boon, you know, for many organizations, because physically it was not possible to reach the data centers. The hardware, you know, was not there. However, then suddenly the cloud transformation picked up. So where, you know, BFSI also gained a lot of benefit. Apart from that, I'll take an example of generative AI, right? So when you talk about BFSI, the biggest concern they always see is the data security and the privacy of the information. The data should not get into the wrong hands, right? They're also worried about the data localization. We don't want our data to, you know, store outside India region, right? Especially the, you know, PII data, including, you know, Aadhaar card, PAN card, financial information of the customer, health information of the customer, and, you know, what are the liabilities that they have it. So emerging technologies, I would say, BFSI will always be number two, number three. They will experiment things, but will not put in production. So that's why they will always take our concurrence, CISO's concurrence, right? Which technology to go for, right? Or if we want to go for it, we will give them the controls. So, you know, for example, generative AI, we will tell them that don't go for open source, but go for, you know, let's say, you know, commercial kind of, you know, a service, let's say with Microsoft Copilot or Google or Amazon, right? Have the instance created, you know, in your, you know, private cloud. Yeah. Okay, do the audit of that instance. Have the policy. You know, don't start with customer PII. Start with, you know, normal, you know, business operations. So this is how we operate. So technology is here to stay. Technology is a game changer. Technology is actually running the banks and NBFCs and, you know, stockbroking these days versus the, you know, organization running these technologies. So they cannot be compromised on the technology initiatives also, but however, you need to balance the risk between the, you know, tech and the, you know, cyber security.
Right. So I think cyber, the scope of cyber is extremely vast. I think we have agreed on that. But from a BFSI standpoint, so if the top three cyber concerns, you know, which you as a CISO are proactively planning for, that CISO is also like a firefighting, where you're constantly, you know, you have this on your mind that you have to plan for it, strategize for it. So what would be those top three things from a cyber threat landscape or overall concern standpoint?
Biggest risk that we see is the ransomware. Okay. Because it creates a disruption, right? Attack happened, you know, we saw the intrusion, right? Ransomware disrupts the business because the, you know, all the data goes to the hacker. Right. Your systems are not available, you're not able to restore. So that's the biggest threat. Okay. And with the, you know, emerging Lockbit, you know, which created a havoc even amongst, you know, other Indian organization as well as the globe, right? Ransomware would always be a first, you know, emerge, I would say, you know, dangerous threat security threat, you know, for the CISOs and the organizations. Second, I would say the data breach, right? Data breach can happen accidentally or attacker, you know, exploiting your data, okay, or, you know, your application system network, yeah. And he's gaining the access to the customer data. It will not have any disruption kind of, you know, event, but yeah, there will be huge, you know, regulatory complications or, you know, obligations involved. Customer, especially if it is an enterprise customer level info, right? Customer will come and sue the organization because you failed to protect the customer organization, right? Customer data. There will be huge, you know, repercussion from the board. The stakeholders will not invest. So it impacts the brand reputation at the, you know, large extent. So data breach is again very risky. It may not disrupt your operations. You will be able to run the business, but, you know, other things can go for a toss, right? Especially the brand reputation. People will not, you know, start trusting you. Yeah. Apart from that, if you're taking an investment from the overseas, right, they may not come and invest because they're always, you know, sensitive, especially the organizations, right, who are adhering to the GDPR, you know, laws.
Right.
The third and the most, you know, threat is that non-compliance with the regulatory. So regulatory and with the way, you know, RBI and SEBI, you know, are, you know, doing the audits, you know, their level of audits are very different now. So they do a lot of deep dive, you know, in the work that we do and with the very compliance, you know, guidelines. Non-compliance to regulatory is also a big threat for us. And it will lead to ban. Okay. They may come and ban, you know, your certain, your specific business. Regulatory, you know, the financial penalties, as well as, again, if it is a financial penalty or, you know, ban, then again, your brand reputation goes. Your business also gets disrupted.
Yeah.
So, ransomware is the first. Second, we talked about the breaches, and third is, you know, regulatory compliance. Okay. So, these three are very, very difficult. I would say the challenges that an, you know, normal CISO or, you know, for any BFSI or, you know, industry, you know, is struggling.
I would pick the third one. From a compliance standpoint, so one is you are complying and one is you are meaningfully compliant. Because as you mentioned, the stringent guidelines that are coming in. So the regulators, of course, in the financial sector are very proactive. And they are actually, pairing up with the industry to raise the overall posture. But demonstrability is yet another important aspect that you need to be able to demonstrate that you're compliant. So, how would you go about achieving that compliance in a meaningful way and that you're able to demonstrate it?
Yeah. So the first thing that we want to do is that we need to follow everything in spirit, right? If you're not following the guidelines and if you're finding a third way or in a midway out of it,
yeah,
we are doing nothing but actually fooling ourselves and the organization. Because that's not the long-term, you know, plan or, you know, which will sustain.
Right.
So first thing is that you need to map the controls, okay, what you have in place against those guidelines. Then you need to do a, you know, assessment that what is you need as an organization or as a CISO so that you implement that and, you know, meet the compliance requirement. Apart from that, get that checked, you know, with the independent, you know, auditor or third party, right, that, yeah, you are meeting these guidelines.
Right.
By simplifying, for example, vulnerability assessment and penetration testing, right,
yeah,
guidelines says that organization should do rigorous, you know, rigorous VAPT for their critical applications or
right,
internet-facing assets. By just running a scan of those assets,
yeah,
does not, you know, solve the purpose. You need to do all the three approaches of black box, gray box, or white box.
Yeah.
You need to start the journey just like an end user. You need to check all the OWASP parameters.
Right.
You need to check the business logic.
Right.
You need to find the issues at the API level. You need to see the, you know, where the servers are,
yeah,
server-related vulnerabilities. So it has to be a thorough approach.
Right.
Then only you will be able to meet the compliance and also the required intended objective of the organization.
Yeah.
By running a scan, simple scan, it will not give me much, right?
Right?
And I can show that report to the regulator and yeah, they will say that the VAPT has been done, but is it done in detail?
Yeah.
That is why that's the question we need to ask to ourselves and our teams and, you know, that we are not doing justice to, you know, our job.
Yeah.
So this is how we should, you know, handle each and every control.
Right.
If firewall, it is there to implement or web application firewall, are we reviewing the rules and policies?
Yeah.
Is it the proper appropriate thresholds are configured? Is it giving us the right results? How many false positives are there?
Right.
SOC, Security Operations Center. By just giving the contract to third party or managing in-house, does not suffice the purpose? Are you reviewing the rules? How much garbage, you know, logs you are getting every day? What all enhancements you are doing it? Are you regularly reviewing the alerts? Is the actions are getting, you know, closed on time? So these are all parameters and measurement metrics a CISO has to check regularly. Then only your compliance will be met.
Right. So I think cutting corners may not help. You have to do in letter and spirit, as you mentioned. So talking about the obligations and expectations, one is that CISOs are definitely, from a strategic standpoint, they're helping boards to A, to quantify, and B, to understand the risk and appreciate it a little better. But what we are increasingly seeing is, you know, whether it is the RBI or the SEBI, or for that matter, IRDAI and other sectoral regulators, they're also putting those specific obligations on the board itself, right? Board members are expected to have, I don't know, maybe a certain level of expertise to be able to appreciate. So how do you think that boards can take this up? How effectively boards can manage this issue? One is CISOs helping, but what should boards be doing, or what would be your recommendation on that front?
This is the best step, I would say, taken by the regulator to make the board accountable should there be any issue in the organization.
Yeah.
We all need to understand is that good governance is must, right? A CISO cannot achieve everything on its own. From the board, it will always be a top-down approach, okay, which will be followed, okay, in the organizations. After all, board are the one who are reviewing all of these, right, as part of their, you know, regular meets.
Yeah.
Okay, all the reports goes to them. After all, they are there to, you know, ensure organization is always in good shape, right? Their responsibility is to ensure we meet compliance all the time. So board, you have to make them accountable, because after all, they are the governing body of the organization, right?
Yeah.
We are executors after all,
right?
But there is, has to be someone to check us. Are we doing our job? And if we are not doing our job, there has to be some direction should come from the top management that, yeah, this thing is missing and it has to be executed, right? Board's member responsibility is not just to see the financials, right? Their responsibility is also to ensure that the controls are working in a desired condition.
Yeah.
That is why we have an audit committee, right? And CEO can be biased. You know, CISO can be biased. That's why you have an independent audit committee,
yeah,
which, you know, reports to the board of directors.
Right.
So to ensure that we highlight the issues, real issues, right?
Yeah.
So that before someone comes and exploits, be it, you know, external fraudster attack or even the regulator, yeah, you know, we should find the issues, you know, ourselves and, you know, mitigate.
Yeah.
So board's role is very, very critical. They have to handle this. Cyber security is everyone's responsibility. And it has to be always driven from top to down. It cannot be any end user, you know, doing everything and board is not giving any direction. That's why if you see all the guidelines, all the policies have to be approved by board.
Yeah.
If you're doing a BCP drill in the organization, it has to be reviewed and approved by board. Board members have to be part of the IT strategy meeting.
Yeah.
Board have to be part of cyber committee meetings. They have to be part of IT committee. They have to oversee the things. And supervision is must. They are, after all, supervisors. And supervision is must in our domain because it's very critical. And, you know, it's an institution, after all, because you are only depend on one member. It's a 4-5 member team, which helps organizations to meet its intended objectives.
Right. And another piece of this overall cybersecurity strategy, which, you know, goes to my heart also, is that the talent challenge. Right. So how have you been looking at this overall talent, building the talent pipeline from three perspectives? One is that attracting enough talent, then nurturing, and finally retaining that talent. So your views on that?
Yeah. So I would say we are facing an acute shortage, right, on finding the best talent. Again, finding a guy is easy. Finding a right guy is becoming very difficult these days, at least, you know, what I have experienced, right? I have not seen much of, you know, people or, you know, staff who have a strong technical expertise. In security, in cyber security, you need to understand it's a multiple domains, right? You have a governance, risk and compliance. You have security architect. You have security operations. You have SOC. So I think 4 to 5 domains are there where people, you know, build their careers. I faced difficult in hiring a good security architect guy who knows in and out how the architecture should be, you know, how to, you know, configure the firewall in a best possible manner, you know, how to ensure all the WAF policies are configured, you know, placing of systems, you know, security layers at, you know, respective systems. So it's a facing acute shortage. GRC compliance guys, you have enough in market. People who are doing the audits, who are peeping, building the, compliance matrices, designing the policies. You have lot of, chunk available in the big fours. Okay, you can find, talent. And even when we do the hiring, we don't see a lot of resumes, we get it. Strong technical person, specifically, in the emerging security technologies, let's say, for example, SIM, security big data, web application firewalls. Normal firewall, we get it, but let's say a privilege identity management. Zero trust, staff who have a good knowledge on the zero trust, that we have a huge shortage. So it is always the demand versus supply. So in GRC, there is a good demand, there is a good supply. But in these kind of roles, the technical, right? Because tech person has to be technical. CISO is not a technical role. It's primarily a strategic role. But CISO needs people like this. So these roles, you don't have much, talent available. People are still learning, but I think, yeah, we need to build the curriculum, accordingly, in the coming years, where, we get these people at a very, early, early stint. But yeah, right now in these technologies, it is difficult to hire. Who knows in and out, or the other, acute shortage is primarily CDC, cyber defense, people who are monitoring the logs and all. So log reading and, taking the required action, predicting what is actually incident or not, security incident response, again, there's a, acute shortage there. So there the demand is so much, but supply is less. So that's why we are relying on multiple partners, but yeah, retaining also, because if we, and their demand is also very high. So we are not able to retain, these kind of employees many a times in our organization. That is why we source them for the, outside partners, or we give as a managed services contract to a good organization.
But obviously this is a complex problem to solve. But, if we were to think about what's the way out, if you were to build or nurture a talent from within, is there a way that you see? Because we at DSCI also believe that the architectural and engineering skills are missing, and they start right at the curriculum level, perhaps at the PG level or UG level, whatever. But what could or how could organizations, hit this particular problem? Is there a way out that you see?
Way outs are there, but the thing is that you need to give them that environment, right? So that they can grow. Right. If the organization is investing in, heavy tools and technologies, right? Yeah. Engineers like them, cybersecurity engineering, people also want to stay and learn, right? But if that guy you are hiring and you're not doing anything in a year, right? And just only relying on the audits, processes and all, those guys will leave. There's one way to that. Invest heavily in the tools and technologies in your organization. That is one way to, retain. Apart from that, yeah, compensation is another important factor. Because after all, it's all monetary, gain, which, an individual needs it, right? And third is that there has to be close sync up with the technology team. You need to build a strong relationship with the technology, because these kind of technologies, there is a lot of interference, required from the CTOs and all. So you need to ensure that you have a good relationship with the CTOs so that these guys don't stress out, right? And if your relationship with the CTO is not good, trust me, many of the initiatives don't kick off, right? It did fail at the, very early stage. So you need to have a strong, relationship with the technology, and this is the way, and give them regular trainings, right? But again, trainings will only clear the concepts. Okay, I can understand what is zero trust. I can understand what is firewall, what is WAF, what is SOC. But implementing, how to implement it, you have to give them live environment to implement. Right. So training is good, but that has to be actually practiced on the floor.
So a couple of questions. So you have given fairly elaborative answers. So I'll jump to a rapid fire thing in 5 minutes. But before that, so I think from an authentication and authorization perspective, because that's another interesting topic which I work on. So we have been deliberating passwordless authentication big time, because passwords may not go away directly, but several models, whether it is the FIDO or several other such passwordless authentication paradigms, are already there and are finding acceptance in the BFSI sector. So what's your take on this future of authentication and authorization from a BFSI sector standpoint?
passwordless is a good technology, which will solve many of the issues, but it will not be a very, fast adoption kind of a technology, because it should also integrate with your legacy apps. BFS are still many of the apps which are legacy in nature, right? So if you want your technologies to, compatible, with passwordless, right? Yeah, it will take time, because it requires a lot of in-house, development, or, lot of upgrades, migration would be needed. Okay. That is worst part. The other is that it is too early to say, we don't know, much of the risks, right? Okay. Using this technology. No technology, we can say that it 100%, right? There'll always be loopholes. So passwordless, I'm sure we have seen in the past, many these kind of software companies have been breached, yeah. Right? So it is good to, have it in the longer run. But as of now, I think it will continue to weigh with, authorization and authentication kind of, methodology, yeah. With appropriate two-factor, authentication, which RBI and SEBI mandated, right, for the, critical apps. So that if one level of authentication gets compromised, second level, you can protect. Passwordless, I would say it will take time, but for at least for BFSI, many organizations have gone for it, but it is not easy to implement, because it has to be integrated with your overall ecosystem of the organization.
And I remember, I think this was a year back or so, where we were talking to you about Zero Trust. Yeah. So, where are you currently in your Zero Trust journey? Because I think it's a long process. So where are you currently at?
So we are on our way to implement the Zero Trust. So we have already signed a contract with Zscaler, who is helping us to build the Zero Trust, network architecture. So we have, started onboarding all of their products, from their suite. So Zscaler, when you say Zero Trust, it's not only one or two solutions. It's a combination of multiple solutions. So we are on our way. We are still, we are following defense in depth approach. And Zero Trust, I would say next 3 to 6 months, as an organization at the group level, will have a strong Zero Trust network architecture. So we are the early adopter, in our NBFC broking space. Right. I think the banking also, ICICI, HDFC have gone for it. So we have also selected a right partner who is helping, where, the security controls, tools will be deployed at every layer. So when you say Zero Trust, we want to achieve that every connection coming to our network, it's getting verified. And then we are allowing them based on the level of access. So we are on our way. Yeah. Implementation has started. Kickoff meetings already done with them. So my IT cybersecurity team, who is headed by Ameya, who's doing the implementation as of now, and we are flashing the updates to board and top management on regular basis. The journey has just started, and next 3 to 6 months we will comply.
Right, because I'm pretty sure a lot of organizations would be looking up to you, and perhaps trying to draw cues as to what could be the way to go. So I think, Mr. Shankar, till now you have been very patiently answering questions in great depth and very elaboratively. But, next set of questions, if you could just give us those pointed answers, which could be, kind of act as takeaways for the audience as well. So what's your, advice to aspiring CISOs? What should they be doing? Simple.
Keep, things simple. Don't think that everything can be done overnight. Okay. Don't forget on basics, and don't fight with technology teams. That's it.
Okay. And if you were to pick, I know it's very hard to answer, but if you were to pick one thing that you as a CISO would want to do in the BFS, while you are in the BFS space, what would that one thing be that you would want to focus all your energy on?
So the biggest thing is that building a robust resilience, setup, because security, cybersecurity incidents, you cannot avoid. Today and tomorrow, everyone will be hit. Right. How soon we can recover, that's a skill I want to learn. And that's my wish, to ensure that something goes wrong, we are able to, keep that up and running quickly. Yep.
So thank you so much for taking out time, talking to us and patiently answering all your questions.
Thank you.
I think we were able to uncover at least some complexities that transpire in the BFSI world. Thank you so much.
Thank you.